we're getting spooky in here. It's the spook season.
It's
October. It's close enough to the spook season. Don't be hating, Pat. All right, hold on. Where's the stupid overlay? Because I get lost whenever I have to play us new music. All right, ready? 3, 2. What's up, everybody? That's very scary. Welcome back to Off the Bench. I'm Brandon Carney alongside Pat Gustafson, and I am not echoing this week, which is awesome. So I think we may have gotten audio issues figured out. We may have gotten Wi-Fi issues figured out. I think we're in good shape. I mean, let me know if I sound like garbage, but I don't think I do.
Stop me if you heard this before. It was my fault. So now what is it, like 3-1? Yeah, I'm winning 3-1.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, my problem was the Wi-Fi in this apartment complex is, like, we've basically, when you sign a lease to live at this apartment, you are only allowed to use the Wi-Fi provided. They will not let you install a new one. And the reviews of this Wi-Fi are just not great. But I think we're getting better. I filed a complaint, basically, but at least the stream seems to be a little bit smoother now. So we're back. We are in just mid-season form, which is perfect because we are getting into the true mid-season of at least fantasy football regular season. We are in the trenches here as we head into week 6. But Pat, I want to start with your general miss.
I'm being told I'm quiet in the chat.
Oh, you're quiet. Oh, you better turn your shit up.
I just turned my mic up to the max here on StreamYard.
Okay, and I can also turn myself down and just make the people turn the volume up. Also, we've just had trades flying around in our league, so pardon us if we're a little bit flustered. But in our main league, which we'll update you guys on in a second, but we've had trades go through. You know, while we were warming up for the pod, basically, we had Saquon and Joe Mixon get traded for Bijan Robinson, and then immediately after, the same team that traded away Bijan acquired Garrett Wilson for Elijah Mitchell and Zay Flowers. So this is our buddy Gary. He's sitting at 2-3. He felt the need to make some big moves. I understand. I don't hate the moves. But yeah, we've got some really good players flying around in our league right now. And
I'm trying to get out on the action.
I know. My head's kind of spinning a little bit. I got in on the action last week with trading for Breece Hall, which, I mean, looked great at first, and then now it still looks good. But Devon Achane is potentially going to IR, which we'll dive into. So I guess trading away Mostert wasn't as urgent as it needed to be. But Pat, let's get into just how this week went for us. You, when I posted on Instagram, as I always do, to solicit some questions for the podcast, you reposted my post to try and get a few extra, and you accompanied it with the caption of, "Ask me how I went 0-5 this week." You didn't win in a single out of 5 leagues this week. How did that transpire?
The funny thing was like, I think my the worst league I had coming into this week was 3-1. Like, I was 3-1 or better in all of my leagues. So it's like, I've got decent teams, but I've only really got 3 ghost stories for you. But in our main league, okay, Brandon, I dropped a cool 112 and lost by 8.
Saw
points.
That.
Thank you, Jamar Chase. But mainly Jamar Chase. Like, I was pretty comfortable until that, and I wasn't home.
Yeah.
I just kept checking. The number was creeping. You can't.
And again, as a reminder for our listeners, non-PPR, 112 is a lot, just so we're clear.
Yes. God, no kidding. I tried to have 167 last week. But my main theme was that, like, I rode the Commanders' defense in a lot of leagues.
Got you off to a bad start.
In another league, a 16-team league, and it's just, like, some of my buddies and, like, their girlfriends.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, like, facing a team that had 2 people on bye in the lineup. Full PPR, I lost 130 to 57. And it was 9-7. 9-7, and I lost, thanks to the Commanders' defense, a cool -5, and I faced, like, I faced the Justin Fields DJ Moore stack as well.
Oh, man.
So
that's rough.
So it was, like, 50 to -5 immediately. So that was hilarious, and that was 4-0. I was 4-0 in that league. I went from 4-0 to dropping 57 full PPR points. And this one's the one that hurts the worst. And, I feel like it's a common fantasy conundrum where the surprise inactive. And obviously this week the surprise inactive was Aaron Jones. And, like, this isn't a league. I mean, I'm active in all my leagues, but this isn't, like, my main league where I'm, like, on top of every possible thing. So, like, I was just like, Aaron Jones will probably play. I'll be fine. Nope.
Didn't play.
Nope. And the only 3 people I had available to drop were Ken Walker, Amari Cooper, and Zach Charbonnet. The guys on bye.
Not happening.
I'm just like, I can't do that for Patrick Taylor.
Right. Who's not worth it.
Who's not going to do anything, and it didn't do anything. So I did it, and I was down 11, and I had the Packers defense, who gave me 10. So I lost by 0.72 points this week with a man down. With a man down.
Oh, man.
So that's a tough look. That's a tough look. So, and then the other two leagues I'm in, I just lost. Yeah, I just lost.
It happens. You know,
but,
hey, look.
But yeah, it was a tough week. But I still think I have five solid squads, especially in our league. We were talking about it beforehand. Like my roster's loaded. But if you don't win, who cares? Like only four teams make the playoffs in our 12-team league. It's really competitive. I personally like it. I like it.
Yeah, you know, I love really, it.
The six teams kind of leads to some kind of 7-6 teams making it. Like, no, like mm-hmm. this is the best of the best, and we eliminated divisions too. So now it's just the four best records.
Yeah.
So I'm 3-2. My team's loaded, but it doesn't fucking matter if I keep losing. Like,
so. No, that's true. But hey, you got Jonathan Taylor back at least active. Obviously, you smartly did not start him in our league this week, which I think if I got him back, you had the running back luxury to
and
not
I'll do because, it again.
Yeah, I mean, Pacheco and Montgomery, who are your starting running backs on your zero RB build, have been very good, especially lately. I think in most other situations, people would be tempted to start JT, but you didn't have to, and you may let him sit again because, look, Moss going crazy. Make him show it first. You have the luxury to allow for that. So, I mean, look, you took a tough loss. You're sitting at 3-2. You'll be all right. Your roster is still very loaded. I, on the other hand, look, I'm not here to say I have the best team because I don't believe I do, but I am undefeated. And thanks to some timely losses and some specific losses, I'm two games up on the entire league. We don't have any 4-1 teams, which is nice. So I'm sitting, excuse me, at 5-0, and as our league historian Brett brought up last week, this was my 100th win in league history. And I got to say, this is a testament to just the misery of people online and how much they want to find any way to roast people. I posted like, oh, I got my 100th win, whatever, with a Photoshop thing of me being Wilt Chamberlain and holding the sign. And somebody replied, and multiple people were like, oh, if my math says that you're 100 out of 208 and that's below 500. And I was like, yeah, though he did that math because he factored 13 seasons times 16 games. And I'm like, yeah, those fantasy leagues that play 16 regular season. My record overall is 149-3, three ties because we didn't go decimal until this year. But got that big milestone win, and now just kind of trying to keep riding and, see where we can go. Trying to leverage the record, truly, Pat, because now I know I can maybe afford a loss or two, and I can take some players who are not necessarily going to contribute immediately and try and stash them away going forward. Now, I don't know how I feel about a guy like Jefferson, because I don't know if he'll come back. We'll talk about that in a little bit. A guy like Achan, who, you know, hopefully isn't gone for the rest of the year. But again, everything's really murky right now. But I have that flexibility to look into those kinds of things. But
yeah, a fellow league member and I were talking about your team. And I said basically the big thing is you've got a lot of guys where it's like, if it all comes together, it could be scary. But right. It's just more, that's more of a question mark. Like we said, like comparing my team to yours, like my team has the floor. Mm-hmm. Your team has the ceiling. Where it's right. Like, well, yeah, like, and it just seems like it's worked out for you. But I mean, like, if it works out in the matchups and you're winning games, then.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I've got Justin Fields, right, who if he can continue to be this guy rather than the guy we saw the first 3 weeks, yeah. I'm in great shape. And that's what we're talking about with the ceiling. But he could potentially go back to that floor of being 10, 11 points. And I'm forced to throw in, you know, CJ Stroud, who I have on my bench. And he's good. But again, he, because he doesn't add value with his legs, is going to be a guy that most of the time tops out around 20, 21, 22. And that's on really good weeks. So, we will see. There is upside. There's like Calvin Ridley's an upside guy. James Cook is a guy that is an upside guy. He went for 2 points this week because he had literally negative rushing yards. So, you know, it's very up and down, but I think I've got a decent team and, just got to keep making those moves. Imagine if I still had Nick Chubb, Pat. That's all I'm saying. If I still had Nick Chubb, we'd be having a different conversation and I'd be just, my dick would be hanging out just so big right now, all the way to the floor. But let's get to some news because we've got plenty of news, mostly injury related.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
What's happening in your world tonight is depression, to be honest with you. So this news is going to be injuries combined with sort of a waiver segment because all these waiver targets are pretty much injury related. So obviously, the biggest injury that we have, the number one consensus fantasy player coming into this season, Justin Jefferson got placed on IR. Now, If you're a Justin Jefferson owner, obviously you are down bad, you are depressed, but there's a lot. There's a lot to break down with this injury, though, because I think there's a few things, right? Who's the immediate beneficiary? Jordan Addison, but he's going to be rostered. I've got Jordan Addison. Happy about that. Not happy about the Jefferson injury. But he is the biggest beneficiary. And then you've got KJ Osborne, who I think I and many others have been begging to get off the fucking field in favor of Jordan Addison, is probably going to be sharing it with Addison now as the top two receivers. But then you've also got Brandon Powell, who came in and soaked up most of the snaps and targets after Jefferson got hurt. Now, what will a full week and rest of season game plan do for that? Will that change things? Probably. I mean, I don't know how much I'm really banking on Brandon Powell contributing outside of being their number three wide receiver and number four overall target at best, yeah, because they're going to be behind Hockenson as well, or he is. But I think how I'm looking at this right now is, if you're a Jefferson owner and you have a bad record, you got to trade him. You got to get something. Trade him to a guy like in my position that's 5-0 and can take this hit, because you got to win now, and he's not coming back again. This is 4 weeks. He's on IR. He's going to miss at least 4 weeks. But here's the real concern, Pat, and this is something that Adam Schefter brought up and that I think is a legitimate concern. If the Vikings are, you know, tension by the time this IR stint is up, we may not see Jefferson the rest of this year. Like, there is, what incentive is there for him to come back to a team that's sitting at, what, 2-7 or 1-8 or whatever it is by the time week 10 rolls around? It's a team that seems like may want to move on from Kirk. Kirk Cousins may not be on this team by the time Justin Jefferson's eligible to come back.
Yeah, so it's tough. If they're out of contention, you know, teams like the Jets and the Bucks, teams like that who are kind of hanging on to contention, you think they're going to be breaking down Minnesota's fucking door trying to get Kirk Cousins?
You would think so, because I don't know what the benefit is to hold on to Kirk Cousins if you are getting, you know, a decent offer like that, and that'll open up a whole new can of worms. I mean, Garrett Wilson's value will skyrocket, even Breece Hall's value, who I think is already good, will skyrocket as the offense will get better, but we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. I just do think it's a real concern that Jefferson has played his last snap of the season. He hasn't been paid yet. You know, he may want to preserve his own body as well. So if you're a Jefferson owner, I mean, it may be worth moving on regardless of what your record is. I guess that's probably a hard pill to swallow if you are 4-1, 5-0, and you're like, no, I'm not getting rid of my first round pick. I understand that. But it's just a possibility to think about, that it's not a slam dunk. Anybody who goes on IR, I think people hear the 4 weeks and they automatically assume 4 weeks. Okay, he'll be back.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the case, especially in such a unique situation like this. So we will have to watch how this Jefferson situation develops. But for now, look, if you're a Jefferson owner, I am sorry. I'm there with you as a former Chubb owner. It sucks losing your first round pick because you feel that is such a gut punch. Your team has been neutered at that point, and you just got to try and pick up the pieces and build back up around him. So, Pat, is there anybody on the Vikings receiver wise that, you know, you're really excited about, or is this like just a KJ Osborne is your maybe occasional flex and Powell is a speculative whatever?
No, I think Osborne is, this will firmly entrench him kind of on the flex radar, like, not more so an occasion when I think it'll just depend on the matchups, it'll depend on who you have on your given team. But we talked about it, we had a question a few weeks ago, like, what is it, do I like sell Jordan Addison, do I like sell high on Jordan Addison, and I was like, I think like this wouldn't be that high, like I think it's gonna get better, and I thought it was gonna get better without with Justin Jefferson in the picture. That wasn't even accounting for the fact that Jefferson might have been out of the picture, and the fact that he's out of the picture, I think Addison is gonna just skyrocket here. And he'll be the guy who, you know, honestly, he was pretty, I don't own any Jordan Addison, but it seems that he is pretty firmly in people's lineups, or in consideration to be in people's lineups before this. He seems like a lineup lock at this point, because despite the Vikings bad, you know, Kirk Cousins, the stat padding king, were him and Russell Westbrook, they produce on offense and they get fantasy points. And I think most of that's going to go to Addison, but Osborne, they clearly like him. They've been trotting him out there on a lot of snaps that people think should be going to Jordan Addison. And we've seen it in bursts in games where Adam Thielen was hurt last year. He had some good games. Like, I'm not crazy about it. Like, there are some guys that I like better here that we're going to talk about on our kind of our waiver section, but if you're desperate at wide receiver, I don't see why not when it comes to Osborne.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the workload is going to be there. He's been a guy that people have been excited about in the past as a replacement whenever, you know, Adam Thielen would get his annual injury. So, yeah, maybe there's some return here. This is a team that's going to have to throw a ton. But, yeah, I will say selfishly and unselfishly, just as a fan of football, I'm excited to see what Jordan Addison does with a full complement of snaps, a full workload, and I would assume being the first read on most of their passing plays if it's not TJ Hockenson. So that will be a storyline to watch over these next few weeks. Absolutely. Now, from the first overall pick to a guy who is either undrafted or a very late pick but has taken the league by storm, a player that this pod and I specifically have very much propped up and supported this year, Devon Achane is expected to be out multiple weeks, has not been placed on IR as of the time of this podcast recording, so this is a little more of a wait and see, but again, still not great news with the knee injury.
Yeah, this one like almost hurts more than Jefferson's, honestly, just because
right, I get that.
This kid has come from, like, there were talks in the preseason that, like, oh, this guy's fifth on the depth chart, like, this guy's right behind Savon Ahmed and Miles Gaskin, to just like, what the fuck? Like, he came
Chris Johnson nowhere, reincarnated.
Nowhere. Like, the three-game Linsanity run. Insane. But it's not just going to be a Linsanity run. Because when this kid comes back healthy, whether this year or next year, this kid's going to be a stud. We know this. But, and you know, all the talk about Raheem Mostert. And again, I do think he is Raheem Mostert again.
Mm-hmm. He sure is.
Because it's been made clear, even with, you know, there's someone that's lurking. He's always lurking. And it's Jeff Wilson.
Jeff and, motherfucking Wilson.
You know, if Jeff Wilson is out there, I know he's been a popular IR. Like, I think I've got him in my IR spot in, like, three leagues. I took him and stashed him there. If he is available in your league, Jeff Wilson needs to be owned. It seems like there's a pretty good chance that he plays this week. And we've seen it the last few weeks, particularly the Broncos game, that they can incorporate two running backs and have two somewhat relevant running backs. And Jeff Wilson has shown time and time again that he has touchdown upside. And touchdowns are king for running backs, you know. Neither of these guys are truly prolific pass catchers. So we'll see where that goes here. But, you know, obviously in the context of your trade brand, getting rid of Mostert for Hall, like, yeah, it kind of sucks. But, like, you got someone just as good, I think. You're even better. So, but, like, I have a league with Mostert where I was just kind of, like, taking the L, like, okay, like, it is what it is. But, like, now, like, life has been brought back into Raheem Mostert, who, like, at least in the 70-point game, like, he was just as present as Achane, and then last week as well. But this week, he was really starting to get very there in touches. And, like, where did this injury come from? Like, all of a sudden, yeah, yesterday, it just pops up that Mike McDaniel's like, oh, yeah, by the way, Achane's got a knee injury, and I'm not putting a timetable on this. And it's like,
yeah. It was toward the end of that game. It was like a pretty nondescript play that I guess he tweaked the knee on. And I said the same thing. I tweeted it. I was like, when did this happen? Because, I mean, I wasn't watching the Dolphins game specifically, as I do on Sundays. I watch Red Zone and then on our secondary TV because we have just the greatest setup ever. I took pick another game to watch, which I believe this week was the Texans because I have the Stroud stack and I wanted to see what Nico did, whatever. But, yeah, I didn't see the play that it happened on. Red Zone obviously didn't show it because why would they? They didn't think anything was wrong at the time. But, yeah, this came out of absolutely nowhere. You know, Pat, it gives me, speaking of Brees again as well, this injury gives me really bad Brees Hall deja vu, where it's like you've got this rookie running back that is just lighting the fucking league on fire, and you're like, this is cool. Like, no matter who owns him in your league, you're excited to watch it for fantasy, for real life, whatever, and then an injury just takes him out. Now, we don't know. Hopefully, it's not season-ending like Brees Hall's was, which we knew immediately that Brees Hall's was. But, we're going to be without Devon Achane for at least a few weeks here. It seems like, again, not placed on IR just yet. But, in terms of reactionary moves, yes, Jeff Wilson should be owned. Jeff Wilson and Raheem Mostert, both very viable starts going forward. I mean, they were, like you said, they were producing together, or this offense has proven that two running backs can produce over the last several weeks with Mostert and Achane. But last year, we knew that again with Mostert and Wilson. It was just not quite to this insane degree. Yeah. But this offense wasn't clicking like this well last year. I mean, between the Tua interruptions because of all the concussions, you know, he was in and out of the lineup. But this offense, if it keeps clicking this well, Wilson and Mostert are going to have more than enough to go around. Before, it was kind of like, look, we know the Dolphins offense is going to be good, but the split between these guys, it almost felt like one was just going to probably be left in the dust every week. And I'm sure that'll happen sometimes, but I think more often than not, you're going to get at least flex production out of both guys, which is, you're okay with that, to be honest with you. I, especially from Mostert, I thought Mostert was going to be not cooked eventually, but I was trying to get rid of him because I knew that, you know, Achane was the guy and Wilson was going to muddy things up and Mostert was going to get hurt, but it is what it is. And now if you are a Mostert or Wilson owner, you're going to be chilling for the next couple weeks. Now, Wilson's practice window got opened this week, so whether he plays this Sunday or not remains to be seen. As soon as he does, I won't say as soon as he does, he should be in your lineup, but, you know, maybe shortly after. Maybe you take the JT approach for 1 week and just see what happens with Wilson, this strange injury that we've had, like, no details on up until lately. The only other thing I would say, Savon Ahmed, I mean, is on your mental radar in the back of your mind, I guess, again. That's about all you can say.
If Wilson doesn't come
back, yeah,
like, he'll get enough touches just to kind of, like, be, like, a gross pickup option, but I'm not.
If you're desperate,
interested in him, even like I said, even without Jeff Wilson,
here's what I'll say. I think if you've got 31-year-old Raheem Mostert as your lead back, like, I'm in a situation next week in our league where Breece Hall is on bye and I'm left with only James Cook as my running back. If you could guarantee me that it's only Mostert and then Ahmed behind him, I would start Ahmed as my second running back, because again, and you guys listening may think that's crazy. You should see our running back free agent market. There's nobody on it. Nobody. Hilarious. So if I can get, you know, at least a piece of the Dolphins offense, I know they're not going to run Mostert into the ground because they're just not going to. But if I can get, you know, 10 touches maybe out of Ahmed in this Dolphins offense, I would do it. So just keep an eye on him, I guess, is what I would say there. Pat, James Conner is on IR. So James Conner with the knee injury, there's just a lot of IR guys. This is a very sad week. He's also on IR, and you've got next up in line is Amari DiMercato and Keyonte Ingram. So Keyonte Ingram missed this week and is not out of the woods injury-wise just yet, but DiMercato seems like was probably gaining on him anyway. DiMercato's playing time had slowly gone up and up and up, and I talked about this with Pat before the pod. I'm very sad because I had DiMercato on my team for about 3 days and then dropped him right before their game kicked off for Zach Evans, because as you guys may have heard on this pod, I'm a Zach Evans truther because I think Kyron Williams is just a mid talent, and I think eventually I'm hoping Zach Evans gets some run, and I saw he was going to be active, so I said let me go get Zach, and I dropped DiMercato, and Connor goes on IR. So, you know, fuck me, can't predict that kind of stuff, but it is what it is. I think DiMercato's the pickup here, and he's probably going to be relevant for at least 4 weeks, but the Cardinals did also claim Tony Jones. They've got Ingram, who's been around for a few years. This is probably going to be a little bit of a gross backfield, but DiMercato is the one you want if you're going to pick one.
See, that's exactly the thing. As much as we didn't like James Conner in the preseason, you in particular, I was a little more bullish on him than you. The dude has been just rock solid. Like, you know what you're... We said, like, oh, you're banking on volume, and he got that volume. And
yeah.
Especially the fact that the Cardinals' offense has looked, I'll say it, like, miles better than we thought it could have.
Oh, yeah, like, absolutely.
Good on Josh Dobbs for, you know, at least kind of putting his name back out there, kind of like when Jacoby Brissett kind of got those, especially with the Colts, yeah, that put him on the radar there. But I think the big thing is that if you think that DiMercato is going to slip right into the James Conner role, you need to tamper your expectations there. I don't think that he is going to get nearly as much volume. And you look at a guy like Keyonte Ingram, who, by the way, has just way too many vowels in his first name.
It's like Key K and then E-A-O all in a row.
He's got to get rid of one of those vowels.
Just one.
I'll let him pick, but I'm not excited about Keyonte Ingram. He's kind of been another one of those guys that's like been in the picture where it's like, oh, Keyonte Ingram is the backup, and it just never does anything. But DiMercato looked good, you know, 10 carries, 45 yards, got the touchdown, got 3 targets, which is obviously really valuable. I'm not sold yet necessarily on who, like, my top you know, I will say, no, he's not my top priority. He's not even my top running back priority. But, again, when you're desperate at running back with all these injuries, with bye weeks already started, not even on the horizon, we are in bye week season. He's a starting running back, and you need a starting running back.
Yeah, starting running backs are, you know, not to be taken lightly at this point in the season. At least for us, I don't know if other leagues are quite as down bad as we are, but, like, we're at a point now where, you know, Jaleel McLaughlin looks like fucking Adrian Peterson coming off the wire to us. It's like we are just grasping at anything. And honestly, fair play to Jaleel. We'll talk about him too. He actually looked good, so can't fault him too much.
Check in the chat real quick here. We got a question from Dr. Sniping, who said DiMercato over Cam Akers. Absolutely.
Yes, 100%.
Cam Akers is still a backup. We'll talk about that Viking situation a little later on, but Cam Akers at this point is still a backup. DiMercato has we have all reason to believe that he's a starter. So
the only thing I would say there is I still say DeMercado, but Akers is one that it seems to be is creeping up on a role that he could have for the rest of the season. Whereas DeMercado, assuming Connor comes back in a reasonable time from this IR stint, he'll take that job right back. Like DeMercado, he may get, you know, some play. He was already getting a decent amount of playing time, as I mentioned, but Akers is a guy that could potentially take over that backfield. But yes, I would still say DeMercado. Honestly, I would say in most leagues, with how thin running back is, stash them both if you can, but I understand that's not necessarily viable for everybody.
You're talking starting, especially DeMercado. Yeah. Owning...
I think he's an okay stash, but also Vikings running back's gross, and that offense is going to tank again, so there's
seems
not going
like
to be as many scoring
was
opportunities.
About, was about starting, because he said with Breece on bye, so it seems like he's going to have both of them.
Okay. Yeah, if you have to start one, considering Breece's bye is next week, it's going to definitely be DeMercado. Anthony Richardson out at least this week versus the Jacksonville Jaguars. We've got another injury to this kid, and it sucks because he's so damn good when he plays.
He's really
not much else to say.
Expectations.
He's been an absolute freak. Every time he's on the field, he's making something happen, and it's just unfortunate that that has also come with its fair share of injuries. Honestly, no real reactionary moves to this. Everybody else we mentioned, you're kind of potentially going after the next guy up on the depth chart. I mean, if you're in a super flex league, you could start Minshew if you want, but that's about all I got.
Josh Downs
stonks going up.
I guess just because, yeah, really, yeah, Minshew is nothing more than a deep league desperation play. Mm-hmm. But I love Josh Downs. You know, we talked about him a little bit in the preseason here. You know what, he had to get through Alec Pierce. Oh no. Like,
very scary.
It didn't take long for him to get through Alec Pierce, and what, he had like he's had a couple weeks now where he's had like seven plus catches. You really like to see that. I mean, he's not like a priority waiver ad. Like, that's my claim to waiver fame this year, is that I picked up Josh Downs on Sunday, this Sunday morning. So like, let's hope he rides with it there, but I guess that's the time to throw him into our conversation. But it just sucks about Richardson, because I feel like the expectation was kind of like, this dude's going to be really rough and probably really bad, but due to garbage time and his rushing upside, he's going to be fantasy relevant. Take those negatives out of the picture.
Like, yeah,
he
seriously.
He has looked so much better as a passer, and obviously his rushing ability is probably second best in the league behind Jalen Hurts, I would argue. You know, Lamar, you could argue Lamar as well, but his rushing upside has been fantastic, and hopefully he comes back. And the Colts, another team that probably people thought would be pretty bad, and it's not like they're great, but they need him to contend. But Minshew is probably one of the better backups. Like, Minshew's been decent in the past as a starter, so. But yeah, nobody really truly benefits from this situation.
Yeah, I mean, Minshew is certainly, honestly, an elite backup, I feel like, in the league. He's as good of a guy to step in and command your offense for a little bit as you can hope for. How do you feel like this affects Jonathan Taylor, if you're a Taylor owner? Because you are. I mean, is this good, bad?
I think it's good, just from the sake that you're not going to get these rushing touchdowns sniped from you.
Sure.
Like, I don't think it's going to affect... Like, I think the offense will still be about the same. If you're Jonathan Taylor owner here, you're more worried about Zach Moss than the QB situation. But I think if anything here, it's just going to provide him some more opportunities. And, you know, we'll talk about that situation later. But, yeah, I think if anything, could be better.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Just is the lack of getting rushing opportunities stolen, does that outweigh, you know, the offense potentially not being quite as good? And I think it probably does. It's probably better for him to just not have Richardson stealing those carries from him.
Yes, because I don't think that the offense is going to take that much of a dip really at all. I mean, maybe very slightly, like definitely not to the point where it's like they're getting significantly less goal line opportunities. I don't think it's going to be that.
Yeah, for as good as Richardson has been, and he's certainly been good, the Colts still every game have really just been scoring in the low 20s outside of their game against the Texans where they put up 31. So Minshew can get them there.
Their rushing game, which we should have expected with Shane Steichen, who, you know, headed the Eagles attack last year. To see this from Zach Moss has been unbelievable.
Oh, man.
Like, I'm very excited for Jonathan Taylor to start chipping away at those 23 carries that Zach Moss had this week. But again, Zach Moss is kind of another guy where, like, some other, like, podcasts and videos, like, just call him fat. Like, it's like, he's just the fat guy who plunged in for some touchdowns in Buffalo. But good on him. And again, don't drop Zach Moss. Do not drop Zach Moss.
No.
Like, if Zach Moss is on your waiver wire, go get him right now, because sooner or later he is going to be the clear backup. But he might be the best handcuff in the league. We're seeing it right now with no Jonathan Taylor. The dude's been elite. Like, he's an elite handcuff. Do not by any, I don't care how shallow your league is, do not get rid of Zach Moss.
Yeah, the way he's playing, he may retain some semblance of value throughout the league, like standalone value, or throughout the year, I mean, as at least a flex play. I mean, there may be weeks where he disappears in favor of JT, because obviously JT is the much more superior talent, but he's playing this well. I can't see him just going away. Like, I just doubt it. You know, JT, even as he gets healthier, like, it's this whole year is going to be a year where he's coming off of injury. They don't have a need to give him 30 carries. I mean, but he can turn 18 or 19 into an incredible fantasy day, as we've seen many times before. But yeah, Moss going to retain plenty of value on his own, I think. Speaking of injuries, again, Khalil Herbert. This one's going back to Thursday, but he's got a high ankle sprain, usually about 2 to 3 weeks on those injuries. And so that leaves Roschon Johnson and Deonta Foreman as the next up in line. And again, another thing, Pat, you and I talked about a little bit before we went live is, you know, everybody's jumping on Roschon Johnson, and rightfully so. He is the rookie. He's going to be good. He's going to get a lot more opportunities here with Khalil Herbert out. But the only reason Deonta Foreman has been inactive is because he doesn't play special teams, while Travis Homer does. Deonta Foreman now is going to be active every week, and there's a real chance that he's the starter on this team for the next several weeks while Khalil Herbert's out.
Again, like, I think it is going to be kind of like a 1A, 1B situation, which we were worried it was going to be a 1A, 1B, 1C situation, which would have been a mess. Right. Glad that got cleared up. But Deonta Foreman is far more prepared to step into Khalil Herbert's role right now than Roschon Johnson. Granted, they've involved Johnson more, but he, like, you know, a few weeks ago, we kind of talked about how it was imminent, and it hasn't been quite as imminent as we thought. Shocker, we're wrong a lot. But but we've seen the last few seasons in Carolina. Foreman was great last year. He was great in Tennessee 2 years ago. Like, this is a guy who has made good on his opportunities, and that's why he still gets opportunities throughout the league. Again, Roschon is definitely the passing down back. You know, PPR leagues, Johnson still has some value, but I would rather pick up Deonta Foreman than DeMercado. Mostly just because we've seen Deonta Foreman do it before. I mean, we'll have to see, especially, again, if Johnson is in percussion. Some percussion
he's
over
playing
there.
The drums.
Concussion protocol. Foreman, oh boy. But there's been no indication, really, that Johnson is in danger of missing this week. But you never know with concussions.
Yeah, they are certainly tricky. I think that's an interesting take. I don't think a lot of people are really thinking about Foreman at the forefront of their waiver priorities this week. It is DeMercado, or if you're in a league where Roschon Johnson's available, people are mostly, I think, prioritizing those guys. We'll find out.
If Roschon Johnson's available, you've got to go get him. Absolutely. He's someone who should probably be rostered in, you know, even just as a stash, but now he'll be a little bit more on the flex radar, but...
Yeah, Roschon's a guy who's going to have value the rest of the season, independent of Khalil Herbert's injury. I mean, what that value will be, we don't know yet, but he was gaining on Herbert, or at least, you know, taking some decent touches away from him while Herbert was healthy. But this is one thing I'll say about this Bears backfield: for as long as Khalil Herbert is sidelined, their upcoming schedule, which has excited me as a field zoner, is the Vikings, the Raiders, and the Chargers the next 3 weeks.
Whoa.
So... yeah, Yeah, your Raiders with their big fucking win last night. By the way, that ruined a confidence pool that I'm in, where all I needed was for the Packers to win, and I would have won the week. So, yeah, fuck the Raiders.
I had in a pool, I needed the Packers to win, and it'd be sub 40 points, which happened.
Oh, so, fucking yeah, but hey, brutal.
By the way, the Raiders. Well, no. I threw in a Raiders note at the bottom of our sheet, so I'll wait. So
yeah,
I'll
you wait, and we'll also get a nice little Patriots rant from me here later on. And
we have fucking stink.
Yeah, they fucking stink, and now they're facing each other. Fucking awesome. But anyway, yes, the point is the Bears' schedule coming up is soft. So if you can get your hands on a Bears running back while Khalil Herbert's out, do it.
And just to mention one more quick thing about Johnson versus Foreman is that, like you said, Johnson has standalone value the rest of the season. I could see a situation where Khalil Herbert comes back and Foreman goes back to being inactive.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
But definitely. If Foreman looks good, I could also see Khalil Herbert fall into that role where he's more of the odd man out in this. But we don't know. We don't know how long Herbert's going to be out. You've got to think a high ankle sprain, at least 2-3 weeks here. We'll see if they put him on IR as well. I don't believe he is on IR yet. But we'll just have to wait and see. But a gross back – again, this just goes to show fantasy football. Like, in the preseason, you talk about, like, oh, I'm not touching that backfield. And then 5 weeks in, you
let
need
me touch
to,
it.
You need, I want to touch it. You need to get into – any backfields you can right now. So this is why you've kind of got to really be zoned in there that we're talking about one of the worst teams in the league here and a guy that's been inactive for three of the first four games.
I want to touch it so bad. I want to touch it so bad. But no, this Bears offense, too, has been clicking lately. Again, has it been strictly a product of bad defenses? Maybe, but they're only facing bad defenses here going forward. So if you've got either of those Bears running backs available on your waiver wire, which at least Foreman should be, I mean, unless your league's insane, go get him because he'll have some value here for as long as Herbert is out. Pat, there are some other waiver targets that are not direct results of injuries from this week, at least, and I think they are worth mentioning. Number one here, Quentin Johnston. The Chargers had a bye last week, and obviously Mike Williams is done for the year. So I think Johnson, because of the bye and because of his own underperformance and not playing while Josh Palmer is, you know, taking most of those snaps, there's a good chance he was probably dropped in your league. I think this you should pick up Quentin Johnson if you can. This is a guy who we saw the connection with Herbert in the preseason. He is going to be a deep threat here eventually. It's just a matter of when he secures that playing time. I think Johnston is a guy who the upside is just so high, and it's coming out of the bye week, maybe this playing time, maybe he gets it now that they've kind of recalibrated and thought over some things. But even if not, I think he's going to chip away at it. Josh Palmer is not going to be their primary number two receiver all season. No. He's just not. Yeah, so I think
Johnston,
he's worth picking up.
You know, first round pick, Josh Palmer, no near that capital.
Yeah.
Obviously, Johnson's a lot more, you know, raw and rough here, and that's why he's not being as involved as he is. But, and like you said, I think last week or the week before, that like bye weeks are kind of where some teams have epiphanies, and like, you know, you see guys start to get involved more. And whether it's this week or not, yeah, he is going to be more of a stash. But if he can really solidify that wide receiver two role, we have seen time and time again with Keenan Allen and Mike Williams and even Josh Palmer at the end of last year that offense, you know, two wide receivers are very, very viable in this offense.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some guys who talent-wise just stick out like a sore thumb on waiver wires. It's just they're only there because of lack of opportunity thus far. And Quentin Johnston, if he's available,
like
is definitely
Jackson Smith and Jigba on every waiver wire I've seen.
Yeah, sadly I had to drop him, but again, his opportunity is much less clear than Johnston's is. Yeah, Johnston at least has a clear guy that he could leap. JSN is not going to leap Lockett or Metcalf unless there's an injury. So go get Johnston if he's there. Another guy, tight end. I mean, look, in the vast wasteland of tight ends, you are looking for anything you can get, but this might actually be a really viable option. Logan Thomas of the Washington Commanders. So if you haven't been paying super close attention, he's played three full games this year because he got concussed in the second quarter of week two versus the Broncos, and then he missed week three because of that concussion. But in the three full games that he's played, week one, he had 8 targets. In his return in week 4, he had 3 targets. Don't like that. But then last week against the Bears, 11 targets that he turned into 9 catches for 77 yards and a touchdown. Logan Thomas, statistically, has been everything I wanted Jahan Dotson to be. So if you can get him and you need a tight end, go get him. Jahan has just been brutal.
And the thing is, obviously, every year you kind of, like this year, I was looking at the depth charts. I'm like, oh, Logan Thomas, like, I can't stay healthy. This, he was pretty good a few years ago, but this guy, once again, this is a guy that's shown us in the past that he's a very viable fantasy player. And again, I think the 11 targets might be a little skewed from the fact that they just had to throw for their lives Thursday. And like, who thought that they were going to be playing that far behind against the fucking Bears?
Yeah.
But it's crazy the fact that they've got Terry McLaurin, they've got Jahan Dotson, they've got Curtis Samuel, and Logan Thomas, not only from the stats, but Logan Thomas looked good. Like, he looked good. And again, with such a tight end wasteland here, this is like one of the first years ever that on all of my teams, I have no tight end worries, like, shockingly. Like, I have, I took either Kelce, Andrews, or Kittle in every league. So, like, hasn't been on my radar. But obviously, looking ahead to bye weeks, Logan Thomas is a really good bye week fill-in here. Or just, you've got a shitty tight end. You've got Pat Freiermuth. You've got Kyle Pitts. You've got, if you need someone to at least throw into the conversation, Logan Thomas, so far this year, I mean, maybe besides, I guess Cole Kmet's another guy who's looked pretty good, but I feel like he might have even been owned. So Thomas might be the best kind of a wide receiver add that you can throw in there.
Yeah, and it's just, you see kind of that trust with Sam Howell. I mean, again, you're right. There should not have been, or there will not be as many pass attempts in a lot of games for the Commanders, as they're not playing from behind quite as much. But he was just looking for Logan Thomas nonstop in a way that he was not looking for Terry McLaurin or Jahan Dotson or Curtis Samuel or even, God forbid, Diami Brown. So this is a viable guy to grab. Fucking who? Matthew Stafford. How about him? If you are quarterback needy, I think this is another viable guy. So he already hit his, he just hit his season high in passing touchdowns in Kupp's first game back, which is two. I mean, a little depressing there, but he hit the season high in passing touchdowns in the first game with Kupp back. And I just think this receiving core is so legit with Puka as the number two, Tutu as the number three. Like, these are guys that I think we're still acclimating in our heads to truly recognize as being real threats. But
Tyler,
this is
Higbee as well, of course. Of course.
And you've just got a very good receiving core now for Matthew Stafford to work with. Look, Stafford went over 300 yards in three of five games so far this year. He did not do that this week. So when you put these things together, inevitably he's going to have a 300-yard game with multiple touchdowns because of Cooper Kupp's return and just having more guys who know how to find the end zone. This is a guy who's going to be able to start for you at quarterback if you drafted a quarterback who's been less than satisfactory, which I'm sure a lot of people did. At the very least, he is a priority streamer. So I think Stafford is another guy to target on waivers this week. And then, Pat, I see you threw in here Tyjae Spears, a guy who's sort of been off my radar because he's been owned in our league since the fucking start of the season, but he may not be owned in viewer leagues.
Yeah, and basically what I mentioned here is that he needs to be owned in every league, but the problem is he's not a guy that's going to be firmly on the starting radar here just because it's all going to depend on the game script. Like, we saw another game script where Spears was playing almost as much as Derrick Henry. You know, he's in on third down, he's in like 2-minute drill situations, and he got a receiving touchdown, he got his first career touchdown. They are incorporating this guy more and more and more into their game plan, and I saw people talking about Derrick Henry in the chat earlier where it's like, if you can get a good offer on Derrick Henry, goodbye. You know, yeah. I don't own any Derrick Henry, but if I were to get any kind of respectable offer to get rid of him, I would do it just because he's going to have these games where he gets 20 touches and 150 yards and two touchdowns, and he's going to be everything that you expected. But it seems like that's going to be in like 50% of the games, which is just not enough for your first round pick or early second and maybe some PPR leagues. But that just doesn't cut it from a guy like Derrick Henry. And again, if something does happen to Derrick Henry, Tyjae Spears, like Zach Moss, an elite, elite handcuff. They've shown that they trust him already. I think they would trust him to take the lead role there if something were to happen to Henry. So if he's out there in your league, he needs to be owned. Again, you're not going to start him this week or next week or who knows, but just the possibilities here, a great stash.
Yeah, those Derrick Henry games are going to be fewer and farther between this year. And I keep seeing so many people point to like, oh, he gets better when it gets colder out and people don't want to hit as hard. And he's got the Texans twice in the last couple of weeks at the end of the season. And I'm like, he's never, I don't think, looked this bad early in the year. And to act like those Texans games are going to be like walks in the park at the end of the year. Like, the reason he's been able to run over the fucking Texans every year is because they build a lead and then they just run him a million times to close the game out. The Texans are not going to be run over, at least from a scoring perspective. I mean, their run defense is middling in terms of just overall standing in the league. So he can have a good game, but it's not going to be a assaulted away, you know, for the whole second half Derrick Henry performance. Like, I don't think he's going over 200. That's my bold take. He's not going to go over 200 rushing yards in either of the games against the Texans, even though he's done that almost every time up until now. Hilarious that can both be serious and sarcastic of a bold take.
And it's not only, you know, like they build a big lead, but like when the game is close, like it is this week, they don't have, you know, even if they're only winning by a touchdown or so, there's been a lot more Tyjae Spears in there. So it's just, it's a tough situation. The Titans have been a real wasteland. Like, we wanted my boy Chig, my dominatrix Chig
new viewers are going to be so
DeAndre
confused.
Hopkins has had his weeks. Treylon Burks has done nothing. Ryan Tannehill is the definition of mid, maybe not even. It's an ugly situation for fantasy in Tennessee. But again, he's still Derrick Henry, so don't sell him for pennies on the dollar. But it's just, I don't know what exactly you're going to get. But hey, maybe you get someone in your league who kind of isn't as tuned in, sees the name value, wants to do it, but
No, you're probably just holding Derrick Henry at this point and taking the good weeks and suffering through the bad weeks. Pat, let's get off of some waiver targets here and go back to guys who are obviously already on rosters. We had some big returns this week. The main one, I guess he actually played a lot. Cooper Kupp did not miss a beat, 19.8 PPR points, but... And this is what we were wondering, and at least through 1 week, we've shown that they can coexist. Puka showed out too, actually outscored Cooper Kupp because he scored a touchdown with 20.1 PPR points. I mentioned it when talking about Matthew Stafford. These receivers are good. They're both, obviously Cooper Kupp is startable. He's going to be your wide receiver one if you have him for the rest of the year, most likely. But Puka is going to be a guy who is not going anywhere. This offense, again, Stafford just looks good. I am not worried about these two coexisting. You take from now through the end of the season, yeah, Cooper Kupp's going to outscore Puka Nacua, obviously, but if you have either one of these guys on your team, you are very happy, and you're especially happy that Cooper Kupp looked vintage. There did not look to be any rust. I mean, that first drive, oh my God, he was the only player Stafford looked for. It was hilarious. I was like, if you thought there was any sort of rust there, it was shaken off immediately. So
yeah, as a Puka owner, I was a bit worried. I wasn't worried to the point of selling, but they showed they could coexist. And obviously, he is going to be the Robert Woods to Cooper Kupp. He is not going to be getting record-high targets and catches. It's just not going to happen. But that connection with Matthew Stafford isn't going to go away. It just means that there are two wide receivers that Matthew Stafford is very comfortable, leaning on. In the Kupp, again, I saw a friend of mine was saying he's in another league where a team is 4-1. With Jonathan Taylor and Cooper Kupp as their first two round picks. Like, if that team went 4-1 without those two, they're not going to lose the rest of the, like, what the hell? Like, good for you, man. Like, wow. Like, holy shit.
That is insane.
But, and Kupp, I feel like that was kind of what we expected. It was that as long as he's healthy, he's Cooper Kupp. Like, I took him 6th overall in a league the day before he re-aggravated his injury. But, I've hung in there 3-2, and I'm very, very glad to have him back. And it's basically just like getting a reinforcement that, didn't necessarily, almost like a, like when an MLB team says, like, oh, I got an injured player. That was like our trade at the trade deadline. This guy coming back. Yeah. That's what it feels like.
That's the Yankees line that has gone to absolute shit for the past few seasons. But in fantasy terms, it definitely can apply, especially if you were 4-1 and got a guy like Kupp back. It was just nice to see there was no sign of like pain there's always going to be risk of re-injury at any point throughout the season. But coming off a hamstring injury, it's an especially scary thing. So it's nice to see that he missed the minimum amount of time and did not lose any of that burst, at least not from what we saw. So all good things for Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua and basically the whole Rams offense. Jonathan Taylor, Pat, we talked about the fact that you sat him and that turned out to be a good move because Zach Moss just turned this into the Michael Jordan from The Last Stand. They activated Jonathan Taylor, and I took that personally. Zach Moss this week, 23 carries, 165 yards, and 2 touchdowns, which honestly probably occurred on a lot of people's benches because of the JT return, added in 2 catches for 30 yards en route to 33.5 fantasy points. Jonathan Taylor, meanwhile, 6 carries, 18 yards, added 1 catch for 16 yards, went for 4.4 fantasy points. I think you played it right. I think people may need to continue playing it this way unless you are just the most desperate where you got to just let JT marinate. Yeah, you may be desperate.
You may not be. This was probably your first or second round pick. I'm in a position where I traded him for, a guy who probably wouldn't have been in my starting lineup the last few weeks. So I'm in a position personally where I don't have to start him, where I can give him another week, which is honestly what I'm planning to do. I'm planning to play Isaiah Pacheco and Puka over Jonathan Taylor this week in a non-PPR league. Just because I'd like to see it. Like, I feel like this is a good situation where you want to see it first, but if Zach Moss is getting 23 carries, I don't think Jonathan Taylor is going to cut fully into that. Like, I do think Zach Moss is still going to have somewhat of a role, but more so as like a, what do they call it, a breather back, when the starter needs to come off for a snap or two, that'll be kind of more of Zach Moss's role. But, he doesn't scare me, though, in terms of being a Jonathan Taylor owner, because I look at it more so, man, look at what Zach Moss is doing with this workload. What can a healthy Jonathan Taylor, who is leaps and bounds more talented than him, what can he do with this workload?
Yeah.
So I'm being patient because I can, and I am excited. I'm still very, very excited to the point where, like, I'm also thinking about trading from that depth to a point where I'll either trade Jonathan Taylor or might have to play him this week.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is that Zach Moss looking this good, I mean, he's already looked good up to this point, but looking this good in the game with JT returning is, I don't know that I kind of said this earlier, I don't expect him to fully go away, and I think he might be a little more than a breather back, because breather back I look at as like what Dalvin Cook was to Breece Hall this week, because Dalvin Cook, there was no point where they were like, we would rather have Dalvin Cook in the game than Breece Hall, which rightfully so, took you five weeks to figure that the fuck out, and I mean, look, from a talent perspective, there may not be a situation where you're like, we'd rather have Zach Moss in than JT, but if Zach Moss rips off a couple good runs, they may be like, why are we going to take him out? This is a guy we've seen perform this year, so I just don't think you're going to necessarily get the volume you were maybe hoping for from JT, the max super duper volume. But again, you don't,
that is,
yeah, again, you don't need it. You don't need it. So I think he'll be good. Don't panic if you are a JT owner.
The other thing too, though, that I was slightly concerned about is, you know, what if JT comes off IR and he still wasn't paid? Mm-hmm. You know, like they might say, hey, we're not invested in this guy. This guy doesn't want to be here. Or he may say, I don't want to play, or, but the fact that they inked him to this extension means he is there for the long run. They are invested in him. So there's no reason for them to kind of tiptoe around him in terms of Zach Moss, who will still exist. You're probably more on a more realistic wavelength there. But yeah, I'm not super concerned about Jonathan Taylor long run. And I mean, if you've stuck it out here and you drafted him and you stuck it out and your team is 3 or 4 wins, awesome.
Yeah, JT's going to be good here going forward. You make a great point bringing up the extension, because I didn't. That was honestly the most surprising part of when I got the alert that he was coming back. I did not expect that extension to follow, and that completely removes any shred of could he play up this injury again and only play the minimum games or whatever that he needs for his contract. No, he is now playing on a contract that makes him one of the highest paid running backs in the league. So if he's healthy, he's going to go, and if the Colts want to run him into the ground, they will, but they just have the luxury that they don't need to make him do that. But JT owners, better days are certainly ahead. This is just the step one of working him back in after a tumultuous offseason, to say the least. Pat, there were some more monster performances this week. You were a victim of one of them, but the first one caught us all, I think, a little by surprise. DJ Moore on Thursday Night Football. I mean, when is the last time we got a massive fantasy performance like this on Thursday Night Football? Like, I feel like this generally doesn't happen. You're watching Thursday Night Football and it's either fucking awful or the most basic game you could ever get. Thursday Night Football generally is just sad. But DJ Moore, 49 points, cooking the Commanders D all night. Justin Fields on top of it goes for 32.98 points, showing that, no, it wasn't just the Broncos defense that he can murder. But yeah. This is just, it's very surprising to me, because after the first 3 weeks, people were making fun of it, like, oh, you really thought that DJ Moore was going to be his, you know, Diggs to Allen or AJ Brown to Hurts. And it's like, over the last 2 weeks, it is. So maybe this was what Justin Fields needed. You just, that one receiver that can beat guys by himself, take all that attention away from the defense. And no, is it going to be sustainable the rest of the season for literally no other wide receiver to obtain a catch? No, it's not. But still, this is an incredible second step for DJ Moore and Justin Fields.
Exactly. The fact that we've seen this happen twice in a row, obviously you're not going to have this ceiling, but maybe this could be a taking off point where, you know, they're going to let Fields cook a little more and, you know, let him be who he truly could be as a passer and as a runner. But yeah, if you're a DJ Moore owner, you've got to be really happy about this, because some of your skits you've been really clowning on DJ Moore, and rightfully so. But I really hope that this is sort of just a taking off point for the Bears offense. And I don't think I own Fields or Moore in any of them, but I just see it happening, because again, not a ton of competition. I mean, like, Darnell Mooney is probably more suited as more of like a deep threat kind of guy, you know, than he hasn't been the last few years. And obviously, they got rid of Chase Claypool.
That's what turned Fields into Mahomes. Apparently, was just getting Claypool out of the fucking building.
Obviously, I think the bigger threat is Cole Kmet. We've also seen Cole Kmet have a few good weeks here. But yeah, I don't see. You know, I think there could be a very reasonable. I think Moore could obviously very easily be, you know, a top 15, top 20 receiver for the rest of the season. If, you know, he's even still, it's not going to happen at this rate. But I think he could, if he get a little more consistency out of him, then he's certainly a guy that you should be starting.
Yeah, DJ Moore, I mean, he's making up for lost time these first few weeks. I want to double check here in PPR leagues. Okay, so he's wide receiver 4 in PPR leagues. Obviously, after that performance, he was wide receiver 1 briefly, but duh. I think in non-PPR, he may be even higher up, but again, not worth referencing because a total of 7 people actually play that format. DJ Moore, massive performance. Okay, that's fair. DJ Moore, massive performance. Again, a quarterback wide receiver duo that is showing that they can be more than what they did the first few weeks. That also goes for Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. After that 49-point performance from DJ Moore, Pat, you would have figured no wide receivers outscoring him this week. Ja'Marr Chase said, fuck that, went for 52.2 PPR points, and now it's leaving us all to wonder, is Burrow back? He said after last game that it was the best he felt after a game, and he actually was moving a little bit this week. His season high 4 rushing attempts. I mean, it's not a lot. I think it only went for like 7 yards, but it showed a little bit more willingness to move. Looked like that calf wasn't quite bothering him as much. And look, the re-injury risk is going to remain all year. That's just what it's going to be until he gets, you know, several months in a row to rest it and get it truly back to 100%. But if we're going to get, you know, 90% Joe Burrow, or, you know, at least maybe it's 100% Joe Burrow, but it's just kind of a scary thing in the back of your mind that that calf could pop at any moment. Whatever. If this is what we're going to get right now, then Burrow owners, Chase owners are livid, because it did not look good before this. And I'm a little surprised that Chase went that nuclear this week.
But just great to see, because at this guy's best, besides Tyreek Hill, this guy might be the biggest matchup nightmare in the whole league. Like, some of those touchdowns, he was wide open. Like, and it wasn't even blown coverages, really. Like, this guy was just so wide open. And, you know, we saw it where he's probably, you know what, talent-wise, a top 4 or 5, you know, some would argue higher wide receiver in the league, and for a reason. And I'm more of it taking it away from Chase than Burrow, because, you know, Burrow had a good game, and I'm also, I wouldn't be surprised if Burrow goes and lays a dud, you know, sometime in the next week. But as long as he's hooked up to Ja'Marr Chase, who is always fucking open, which I think they might have taken that to heart. Obviously, no T. Higgins. Trent Irvin and Tyler Boyd are irrelevant. Like, Tyler Boyd was a popular pickup last week. Irrelevant, even without Tyler Boyd there. So, like, obviously, T. Higgins will be a factor, but it was really, really good. Again, zero Chase stock, zero Burrow stock, but it was just really, really good. Not to pop off the way he did against me, but to see him clearly being the alpha wide receiver that he is going to make lots and lots of people very happy.
Yeah, I didn't know if we'd see a performance like this from Chase all season, honestly. I mean, this was a player. This is the player you drafted, is the guy that is capable of just destroying a week
this
by
was
himself.
A guy going as high as second in a lot of PPR leagues.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, hey, I saw some leagues where he got picked over Jefferson because, you know, the talent levels are similar, to be honest with you. But yeah, look, the re-injury risk is going to be there. They play Seattle this upcoming week, and then they've got the bye, so maybe, you know, Burrow can get even a little more healthy. But if we get this version of Burrow the rest of the year, he and the Bengals will be fine. They looked very good. And another player that is just kind of ancillary to this and also going to benefit is Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon's been a guy that has been just, he's getting all the work on that Bengals offense, but there just hasn't been a lot of scoring to go around. And look, Ja'Marr Chase isn't going to score 3 touchdowns every week. So Joe Mixon will be a guy that I think is a potential buy low. And we'll talk about some more of those guys in a couple minutes here. Pat, I want to victory lap this one just a bit, because look, yes, I did have to trade Raheem Mostert for him, but the forecast for Breece Hall was right on point. So I believe when I mentioned Breece Hall last week, I can't recall if it was before. I know I made the trade before we got the alert that Robert Saleh was taking the chains off. There was no more touch limit or anything like that.
I believe that's the case.
Yeah, I know I made the trade before that came out, but I'm not sure if the pod was before that. Either way, the timing was perfect. This was, you know, 5 weeks into the season was kind of when, you know, fantasy doctors and such were projecting Breece could be back to full strength. Well, again, the chains came off, and he was facing the Broncos. It was just a perfect formula for Breece Hall to pop off. Went for 22 carries, 177 yards, and a touchdown, plus 3 carries for 17 yards. 25.4 points. This is officially taking Dalvin Cook from, you know, 1A, 1B duty to backup duty, and I expect it to be that way the rest of the year. Breece Hall, the reason I wanted him was just because I know this is a top 3 to 5 talent running back in the league. It's just a matter of, is he full strength off the ACL and how much work is he going to get? I think this, to me, Pat, is a top 5 running back for the rest of the season in fantasy. And, you know, the injury to Elijah Vera Tucker sucks on the O-line, but Breece Hall is simply too good. We've seen him perform in bad Jets offenses with bad Jets O-line before last season.
Bad Jets quarterback.
and bad Jets quarterback. So, you know, obviously you would love to have Rodgers out there, but he clearly doesn't need him. I think Breece is just that good. This is a tough matchup this week against the Eagles. I'm not thrilled about it. The Eagles have just bottled up running backs all year. They're a pass funnel, yeah. But the running backs, they have just bottled up. So not a great matchup here, but rest of the way, this is a top five or at least top 10 running back.
Yeah, I was going to say, at the very least, he's an RB1 going forward because he is so talented. We saw him on pace to be the overall RB1 as a rookie last year, which is incredible. And, I mean, it makes sense because Dalvin Cook has looked awful. Like, he has
arguably the worst running back in the NFL who's actually getting touches on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, and there's no name that's jumping to my head.
Alexander Madison.
Oh, poor guy, man. Thank you. Good. I'm glad Alexander caught a touchdown this week to avoid being
good
in
for him.
Jail. So we're glad to see that. But yeah, Dalvin Cook has looked so bad, and we weren't completely panicking on Breece Hall when they signed Dalvin Cook, but honestly, we were probably a little more concerned than we should have been because there should have been no concern.
He's so washed.
They'd ease Breece in, and then Cook would still be a factor, but Cook is not going to be a factor.
No.
If they really let Hall rip, and obviously, like you said, you traded for him at the perfect time because the Broncos defense, nobody better than them to unleash against.
Yeah.
So it was good to see that too. So a lot of bad, but a lot of good this week too. A lot of guys who had been pretty rough or not living up to their potential finally exceeded their potential. So yours was the perfect kind of sell high, buy low combination somehow. And, you know, it is going to work out as well for the guy that made the deal on the other side who's now going to get Mostert.
Sure.
But I do think that I would rather have Breece Hall than Raheem Mostert by a lot.
Breece Hall is just, even with Achane out of the picture for now, and even if it is the rest of the season, Breece Hall is such a less volatile asset because there is no question that he is the best running back in that backfield. There is no question he is going to get 90%+ of the touches when he is healthy, whereas both of those things can be questions with Mostert. Wilson has looked just as good as Mostert in the times that he's been healthy. Their numbers are virtually identical, so Mostert's just a lot faster, which we know. But from a fantasy perspective, yes, I have zero regrets even post-injury. Pat, I just clowned on Alexander Madison a little bit, but rightfully so, because even with that touchdown, he may be slowly losing his job here. So look, if you can sell, I'm not even going to say sell high on Alexander Madison because I don't think that's possible. If you can sell medium on Alexander Madison, I might do it. He had a season low 57% running back rush share because Cam Akers went up from 22.7% to 35.7%. It's not a good sign that the second week that Cam Akers has been in the building, he's chipping away at this work already. And with Justin Jefferson out, the room of the Vikings is just not an attractive place to be anymore because the scoring opportunities are going to be, in theory, a lot fewer. And that's before we even talk about the possibility of them trading Kirk Cousins. We were relying on Alexander Madison to produce because of just him being the only guy on a team that was going to be scoring a good amount of points. Now he's not the only guy, and they're probably not going to be scoring a good amount of points. And this is not necessarily a pro Cam Akers thing either. I mean, even though he may slowly be taking over, it's more of a Madison is not going to be a reliable player if you've considered him one up to this point.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that the biggest appeal of Madison was volume in a good offense. And I mean, again, like we said, the offense is still producing for fantasy, but they're not producing real life, and that is going to take a hit without Justin Jefferson. And I think the part of the reason why there's no competition, because there was no competition. It was Ty Chandler and
Dwayne McBride.
Thank you, Dwayne McBride. Yeah, I forgot about you, Dwayne. Sorry, that's how irrelevant he is right now, but there was nobody that had at least the pedigree of Cam Akers, being a second-round draft pick and someone who was very, very good at the end of the year last year. We still have no clue what happened in the offseason to have him go from a guy that McVay said would be very involved to a healthy scratch by week two. Still don't know what happened there, but he is a far more viable option than Ty Chandler, and I wouldn't be surprised. I still think Madison is still going to be a relevant guy. I think, if anything, it more just be a two-headed committee there. But Cam Akers' stock is going up, but just like how high can a stock for a running back in this offense really go right now?
A two-headed committee on a bad team that's going to be playing from behind and just not scoring a lot. It's just, it's gross. Again, in this, the landscape of running backs, like, yeah, you probably want to hold on to one of them because just you need guys with a pulse and that are actually touching the ball sometimes. But neither of these guys are going to be anything more than, I don't think, a flex play, you know, from this point forward. If this touch total gets even closer next week and we're at 50-50 or whatever it may be, it's going to just be generally gross results for both guys. However, one guy that I am a little optimistic for is Jaleel McLaughlin, a guy I talked about who was kind of the waiver darling of last week. This week, he went for 9 carries for 68 yards, plus 3 catches for 21 yards and a touchdown. Look, when you get guys that take over because of an injury, which was the case because Javonte Williams was out this past week, there's always a chance that the guy is just not that good and that he'll lose the job right away when the other guy comes back. Jaleel McLaughlin had a decent amount of hype here in the preseason. We were hearing good things that he was a name that was on people's radar. He was being drafted in like underdog leagues, you know, in late rounds and stuff because just dart throw. It was a guy whose name had some positive sentiment associated with it. When you follow that up with an actually good performance, that says something to me. I don't think that when Javonte Williams comes back, like, Jaleel McLaughlin is just going to go back into the shadows. I think Samaje Perine may get even less work.
I was going to say, I think Perine's kind of dustier more so than Williams. But
yeah, like this backfield, like, it might get messy, but this offense, I'll say this, it's been moving. So I have a little more optimism for the Broncos offense than I do with the Vikings. And here's why. The Broncos, 10th in the league in points per game at 24.2. The Vikings, you know, just to compare this to the Madison situation and why I'm not optimistic for either of those guys, 16th in points per game with 22. But again, that's with Justin Jefferson. So you assume that's going to dip. The Vikings may fall into the 20s in terms of team points per game, while the Broncos here, as weird as they've been, are sitting at 10th. So there's going to be scoring opportunities. There's going to be touches to go around. I just think Jaleel McLaughlin's talent and production so far is going to keep him on the field enough that he will be a relevant fantasy play going forward.
Yeah, I kind of brushed him off last week, and clearly I shouldn't have, but I think he would more so kind of fall into the complimentary role that Samaje Perine really hasn't been in. People were really high on Samaje Perine to kind of be that pass-catching back in the Sean Payton offense. You know, what could possibly go wrong? Well, Sean Payton might be Kevin James at this point. I accidentally watched Pardon the Interruption for a few minutes yesterday.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry.
And they were talking about, like, who's more, you know, who are you more worried for, you know, Sean Payton or Bill Belichick? And it was more so that Bill Belichick's legacy is solidified. You know, that man's on as many Super Bowls as he's won, what he's done. Sean Payton could really take a hit here, especially, like, what happened in Denver last year with how bad they were under Nathaniel Hackett. If they're just as bad under Sean Payton, he could take a severe, severe hit, but... Yeah, McLaughlin is more so just a, you know, we'll see what happens with Williams. It seems like he's probably pointing towards playing.
Trending toward playing this week.
We'll see what happens there. Obviously, if he does play, I'm not starting McLaughlin, but he's not a guy that I'm dropping. I'm not rushing to send him back to waivers at all. But I think Perine, like, I'm in a dynasty league where, you know, I've kind of had Perine and I'm in a bench crunch right now with, you know, especially with young players, and Perine's got to go. So.
Yeah, another running back where just, you know, the vibes are kind of good. Like, it's a good talent. He's getting more and more touches. And again, it took Javonte being out for him to break out, but I don't think he's going to go away now. So hold on to him, see what happens, because you just really never know. Javonte could get hurt again, and then you have a guy who people are going to be scrambling for on waivers again if you dropped him. So hold on to Jaleel McLaughlin. Pat, couple of buy low players I wanted to talk about. Look, we're 5 weeks into the season. Some of us, some teams will have cushions, you know, at being 4-1 or 5-0, and they're just looking for guys that they can get that'll maybe produce a little better here going forward. And maybe some owners with worse records are panicking on guys who haven't performed very well lately. So these guys, look, these are name brand names, and it's not guys that any sane person should overreact to their latest performance, but inevitably, people in fantasy football have recency bias in both directions, both positive and negative. And for two straight weeks, all of these guys have not been good, or they've been at least very mid. Devonta Smith, Chris Olave, Joe Mixon, and Tony Pollard are the three players I would be targeting if the owners of them in your league are panicking, or if you are just looking to stockpile talent. These are all good players, all have certain little, you know, not red flags, or I would just say circumstantial things that have kept them unproductive for the last few weeks that are going to get sorted out. Devonta Smith, I don't even know how to explain Devonta Smith's really. He kind of does this. He just kind of disappears sometimes, but then he inevitably pops off later on.
I was going to say, you mentioned red flags. Like, I am most concerned about him, and this is a former Devonta Smith owner. You know, I traded him for Jonathan Taylor and the boy Gus Edwards, but he's the one that I'm by far the least confident in of that four to really bounce back, just because even the weeks where he had a couple of huge games, they were based on big plays, which obviously you've got to bank on that with a guy like Devonta Smith, because he's got incredible big playability. So you can't, you know, you can't completely take that out of the play. Like, I love that when people are like running backs, they're like, oh, you know, this guy had a 67-yard touchdown run. But he looked terrible
if
otherwise.
If you take that away, yeah.
It's just like, oh, if you take away the good players' good plays, then they're bad. Like, yeah, no shit. Like, but even in those weeks, he, like, I think he had the it was a Thursday night game. Yeah, it was their Thursday night game where, you know, he had a big day, but it was basically on one big touchdown. So even in those games, his target share isn't great. He's not getting a ton of catches, and therefore he's the one I'm most worried about. Like, compare him to Chris Olave, who... Mm-hmm. You know, the results weren't there, but after he was almost a really surprise scratch this week, you know, he still led them in route participation. Like, better days are surely ahead for Chris Olave, one of Pat's pals. And Tony Pollard was one of my pals, too. And the Cowboys stink, man. After their, you know, people thought, like, after week one, it's like, oh, my God, the Cowboys are legit. Like, this could be the Cowboys year. And it's like, I wouldn't have gone that far, but I figured they'd be a, you know, really rock-solid playoff contender. God, they've looked awful. They've looked awful. But, I mean, again, that's what happens when you play the 49ers. Like, they're going to have opportunities, and Tony Pollard is going to have far more opportunities. And we've seen it. When he looks good, he looked great. Like, he looks like the first-round pick that he was advertised as. And, yeah, if you can buy low on, in my opinion, particularly Pollard and Olave,
yes,
I'm jumping at the opportunity.
Tony Pollard, funny enough, a victim of blowouts in back-to-back weeks, fantasy-wise, just the blowouts were in opposite directions. They blew out the Patriots, so they didn't really use him because they scored all their points via defensive touchdowns, and then they just kind of let Rico Dowdle run, whatever. And then this week, they were getting blown out so bad that they had to rely on the pass game to try and catch up. Yeah, the whole fourth quarter was a wash. Nobody fucking played because it was such a blowout. So, yeah, Tony Pollard, more normal game scripts will come because that's just how football works. So he will be just fine. Chris Olave has been, you know, yeah, he had that weird little toe hiccup before the game started, still managed to score a touchdown and kind of save his day. But Derek Carr, as he gets healthier, you know, Chris Olave will be just fine. All the peripheral stats that you want to see for Olave are there, the first read targets, the air yards, all that stuff. He will be just fine. And Devonta Smith, Pat, just to touch on this, he had a stretch last year from week 8 to 12 where, at least in non-PPR leagues, he went for 2, 2, 7, 7, and 5. And then after that, from week 14 on, 16, 12, 12, 23, 11, like, he will get better. It's harder to predict with him when the fuck it's going to happen. I'm just, he's too good on too good of an offense to say that it's not going to happen. Like, at the very worst, you're getting a Mike Williams type who's healthier than Mike Williams, where it's like great offense and will make explosive plays, just a matter of when. If you can get low on, buy low on him, I would do
get
that
low,
as well.
Get low.
Get low, bitch. And then
oh,
Mixon.
Copyright struck, sorry.
Oh, fuck. And then Mixon was just more of what I said earlier. That offense, you know, if Joe Burrow's going to look like this going forward, there's going to be a lot more scoring opportunities for him, and he's already been getting the carry. So if you can get those guys, Devonta Smith, Chris Olave, Joe Mixon, Tony Pollard, if owners are panicking, go get those guys. Oh, I don't want to do this. Oh, man.
I could go first.
Oh, boy. Okay, so I put here at the bottom of our show sheet before we get to our viewer questions and then Pat's rant here. I put together, another rant on Josh McDaniels. I put together a little rant here on the Patriots, and I just wanted to talk about just kind of how this season's been going. Because, look, this season is an unmitigated disaster. There's no other way to put it. And we're only 5 weeks in, and I'm already saying that we got rid of Matt Patricia. We thought things would be better. The offense would figure it out while the defense was talented.
That's the problem. You needed him.
Yeah. No.
I look like Matt Patricia with a worse hairline, so
I could look like Matt Patricia if I just shaved my damn head, but I'm not going to do that. Here's my thing with the Patriots. First things first, we deserve this. I get it. I understand. My entire life, literally my whole conscious life, this team had Tom Brady and won 6 Super Bowls in my lifetime. I only remember 3 of them, but they were either winning the Super Bowl or deep into the playoffs every single year of my life, other than the one he got hurt and Matt Cassel had to play. So I get it. You know,
they were even
teams
good without him.
They won 11 games, missed the playoffs.
And that was just a really good game. Jeez. So yeah,
yeah, it was a ridiculous year
at that point.
Yeah, it was a ridiculous year. But like, I understand this, and I'm not asking for pity. Like, this is it's weird for me to experience this, but I get it. It's kind of just the cycle of sports. You know, if your team is a dynasty for however long it is, eventually they got to come back down to earth. It just so happened that we are crashing down to earth. My beef with this is people ignorantly commenting on the subject and acting like they know what the fuck is going on. Because, look, Mac Jones is mid. I understand this. He's mid. He's never going to be more. He's never going to top out as anything other than a Kirk Cousins level quarterback. And that even may be optimistic. But if you are pointing the finger at just Mac Jones and you think the Patriots' issues are Mac, put in Zappy, things will be better, you're not paying attention. That's all I'm saying as someone who's following this saga so closely. Mac is mid. Blaming him is so fucking lazy. The problems for this team are all over the field. The O-line is terrible. Mac has no time to throw, and even when he does have time, he feels like he doesn't have time because most of the time he doesn't have time. His receivers are mediocre as fuck. Not a single receiver on this team is built to be anything other than a wide receiver two at max. This team signed or TikTok star. Yeah, speaking of the TikTok star, this team signed him to the same contract that Jacoby Myers signed with the Raiders. Pat, I don't think I've heard Juju Smith-Schuster's name in a game really ever this year for doing anything remotely positive. The other receivers, Kendrick Bourne's been better. DeMario Douglas has been better. Devontae Parker has been better. Like, I don't understand why you would let your guy go if this was the kind of player you were getting back. It is a I wasn't this critical of it when it happened because I thought Juju still had something left in the tank. But look, I'm not paid to evaluate this talent. Why are you guys going out there and saying, yeah, Juju's the guy that we want over Jacoby Myers? I don't understand that. And then the defense, like, again, point fingers at Mac if you want, but this team just lost its two best defensive players. Matt Judon is gone for probably 2 months. Christian Gonzalez is gone for the year. Any sort of hope that we had of relying on this defense to bring us anywhere this year is also gone. So yeah, that's going to lead to us being blown out in back-to-back weeks by a combined score of like 72 to something. I don't know what the fuck, and basically nothing. I just want people to understand the context a little more. Like, this team, it's in shambles top to bottom, and I just don't think Mac Jones is that bad, but I also know that just overall, as a Patriots fan and as a fan base, we do deserve this. I understand, but just don't be uneducated about it. That's all I ask.
I'm going to channel my inner like 65-year-old sports fan here and just like look beyond the score and beyond the stats. Just watching them play, they play with no life. They look like a lifeless team. And, mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, I don't think this is, like, the possible reality. I think this is it for Bill Belichick. I cannot see how they can rebuild with him and move forward with how bad this year's been in the decline in the post-Tom Brady era. And especially since that Bill is not the best GM. You think about some of these draft picks they made, some of these signings. Bill is probably the best. I don't even say probably. I'll say the best football NFL coach in history. But his GM moves, especially of late, have not been great, whether it's a draft, whether it's free agency. And I just can't see. It's clear that they need to tear it down, basically. And what better to do than tear it down than to start over? And it's a crazy reality to, you know, just not see Bill Belichick. And obviously, I think he's going to retire. I don't think he's going to, you know, go somewhere else.
The worst thing is, I think it might be a retirement, if you know what I mean, where it's like they kind of agree, like, we don't want to publicly fire you.
They would never fire.
And you steps down. Yeah.
With that kind of pedigree, you just can't do it for what he's done for an otherwise miserable franchise up until that point. They were one of the laughing stocks. The paper
bags are coming back.
You can't do it. And, you know, obviously, when a team is good or a team is bad, everyone looks at the quarterback. You know, that's the focal point of every team. And
that's my issue. It's lazy.
A bad look, and it's a bad look on Mac Jones. And while it's not, you're right, it's not on Mac Jones, but it's fair. The criticism.
No, he's not helping. I'm not trying to sit here and say he's great.
And I don't think Bailey Zappi is going to change much. But that said, no. When they go to Las Vegas this coming week, if Mac Jones is not looking good and they are struggling to compete with the Raiders, I feel like they just have to, just for the sake of like trying something new, even though they're not terribly different quarterbacks. I feel like you have to do it just for the sake of it.
Max Crosby may just eat all of our quarterbacks and we will be left with none. Like, I, after watching how he just game wrecked the Packers, knowing how bad our offensive line is, I am terrified of what this man is going to do. And yeah, it's look, as a Patriots fan, I guess I don't want to say this, but I'm almost rooting for things to keep going in this direction, because as it stands, we're a bottom three or four team in the NFL. And if it keeps going this way, at least the rebuild might get accelerated by having a really high draft pick and we go get a really good quarterback or a really good player at another position and start things over. But yeah, I don't, it's just very weird for me, Pat. It's a very weird adjustment period, because I thought, you know, the early part of the Mac era was good. It was the pre-Matt Patricia Mac, rookie Mac looked really good. And I was like, all right, we're going to at least, you know, continue to be a competitive team. And that has just not been the case here going forward. And I think, you know, not to speculate too much, because I'm not in their locker room and I am not listening to Belichick. And the word has been that, you know, the players still do receive his message, and they're, you know, they're not tuning him out or anything, as can happen with coaches. The one thing I worry about is that if Bill Belichick was going to get, quote unquote, washed in any department, it could be as a motivator, because that is one thing that Brady did just on his own for years. I mean, yeah, Belichick was obviously a huge part of it as well. But, you know, when you had Brady around, you never had to worry about any of your other players playing with fire under them or being motivated. Like, now, who's the leader? Like, Devin McCourty even retired on the defense. Who is the guy that is getting this team fired up and ready to play every week? Matthew Slater? That's great, but he plays special teams. Like, there's only so much that, so far that can go, you know? So, just not a good scene. I'm coping. I'm crying and I'm coping, and we'll see where this goes.
Yeah, and again, it's a lot of people are soaking it in, including myself.
Oh, they're reveling in it. I understand.
And people like that, including me, should enjoy it. Should enjoy it, because just the Patriots had this league by the fucking cock and balls for 20 years, seemingly. So, like,
I'm finding myself reminiscing on those wins a lot more lately. I'll just say that.
Yeah, you take the, it's one of those you don't know what you got until it's gone kind of things there. But I will say, I'd rather be a fan of my team right now than a fan of your team.
Which
but,
just says a fucking lot as
which
well.
Which is bad. But here we are. The Raiders beat the Packers last night, who looked awful. Jordan Love has not looked good the last couple weeks. And I'm angry. I'm angry because for the second time in 3 weeks, Josh McDaniels tried to give away a football game. Fourth and two, 50-yard line, they're up 5 points. Packers are going to need a touchdown regardless of whether you kick a field goal. The only difference is you kick a field goal, they're going to need a touchdown and a conversion. Okay.
I believe you were up four. The field goal would have made it
four?
Seven. I think it was four, and the field goal would have made it seven.
Jackass, I am.
Regardless, I mean, same concept.
What was the final score, chat? What was the final score?
It had to be 21-17 or 24-20.
I thought it was like 20.
Stand by while we stat correct.
Stand by. Fortunately, I don't work in stats.
Oh, God, yeah. It was, sorry, 17-13, Pat. Even lower scoring than I thought.
Oh,
so you were up
so
four.
4 point game.
4 points. 17-13.
Okay, so regardless, they need a touchdown. Okay, regardless.
Yes.
But at that point, you're just saying, do they tie or do they win? To go for the field goal in that situation, I get Daniel Carlson's great. Doesn't miss a lot. He misses. This may not be a conversation. He makes that field goal. But to say that, you know, from the 50-yard line, and to not go for it on fourth and two shows that you have no faith in your offense and that you have no faith in your defense. You have no faith in your offense to convert a fourth and two, and you have no faith in your defense to prevent a touchdown at midfield with, what, a minute or two left in the game. And, again, the miss makes it look worse. You know, the miss makes it look worse because they very well easily could have lost that game because of that. But I'm just more mad about the principle of it. The fact that this guy, just his decision-making at the end of games based on win-loss, based on, you know, logistics, has just been terrible. This guy has just proven to be nothing but a clown. And now the Raiders now are in a position where they're 2-3 where – They host the Patriots, who have been miserable. We just said they've been miserable. They go to Chicago, who again have looked a little better, but still very beatable. They're going to go to Detroit. They're going to get their asses kicked. Then they host the Jets and the Giants. They could very easily win four of those five games. I bet you they win two somehow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how it's going to happen. I do think they'll beat New England this week, but I don't know how, but I think they're going to win two of those games. And Jimmy Garoppolo is awful. He's really awful. And again, I still don't regret the Derek Carr decision. Derek Carr is not a whole lot better than Jimmy Garoppolo. He is, but nothing crazy. But and then just, you know, they don't throw it. They finally throw to Mayer last night. They, you know, Hunter Renfro's a non-factor. I'm just very puzzled on a weekly basis. And now this could potentially make that Steelers decision look even worse. If they can go and take three games in the next five or maybe four, when they had a game, you know, in the palm of their hands that they didn't capitalize on, I just wonder now if, you know, if they do kind of struggle in this easy stretch here, if they finally just can this guy's ass and have to start over again. But, you know, Josh McDaniels is just not head coaching material, and it's going to be funny now because, you know, if Belichick does go, you're not going to get an heir apparent to him. They're probably going to look out of house. So now the heir apparent in New England is probably gone. So, but
we'll see. Supposedly Gerard Mayo's been tagged as the potential heir, but we'll see if that stands.
Which he should be, because Gerard Mayo is going to be a fantastic head coach, whether it's New England or elsewhere. He almost got the Texans job this year, I believe. He was one of the – or was that 2 years ago when he almost got it?
He almost got – it may have been Texans. It may have been a different job. But either way, he almost got it. And the fact that he stuck around led a lot of people to believe that he was basically promised the heir to Belichick whenever it happens.
See, that's who I wanted when – like, that was the – when the Raiders decided they would get rid of Bisaccia. Gerard Mayo was the first guy they announced as a interview. And I'm like, great, hire him. I'm like, hire him. But just – yeah, Josh McDaniels has just proven he is not a good NFL head coach. And despite the win, you know, I'm just not happy. I'm not happy with this guy. I don't know what can make me happy with this guy, but
nothing. I don't.
But
think
I'm not. So you know, after that, let's jump into our viewer questions here. This was oh God, I can't read. Telepathy maybe, but an X instead.
Telepathy. Telepathy.
Telepathy. Oh God, I'm just
you're illiterate. It's fine. That's why we do video right and audio.
How do you feel about Chase Claypool going to the Dolphins? Fantasy stash. Well, telepathy in short. No.
Absolutely the fuck not. This question, and look, not to roast you because you are not the only one that's ever asked me a question like this. This is what we talk about when we say guys retain name value for way too long. Like, Chase Claypool is dust. He is not... He at one good year, he is nothing in terms of NFL and fantasy. Like, this is a guy who is, when the Dolphins receivers are fully healthy, is their wide receiver five. I mean, he's just taking the place, maybe if he plays well enough in practice and stuff, of Chosen Anderson. And or sorry, Robbie Chosen, whatever the fuck his name is. Anderson, another another absolute goon that is not worthy of our breath. No, do not stash Chase Claypool. He has no path to relevance or playing time unless Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle retire tonight. And even then, I don't think it's really going to be that good. So no, Chase Claypool, non-factor. Let his modest production early in his career go out of your head so you can stop thinking about this guy.
Like, the dude had one good year, and even still, he was never better than Deontay Johnson. He was never better than George Pickens. Like, he was never the most talented guy in the room. It just goes to show. No. I think the biggest takeaway from this is just how asinine that trade for the Bears is going to look.
Oh, it's so bad. It's
not
so
only the
bad.
Fact that they, but a second-round pick, which turned out to be a first with a forfeited pick. Now,
yeah,
32nd
right,
overall
basically.
Pick. 32nd mm-hmm. overall pick. For a guy who did nothing for them, and that they had to flip for pennies on the dollar compared to what they got for him. Just an embarrassing move for just a very, very irrelevant. I don't even want to call him mid. He is just a very irrelevant football player right now. And Detroit, Jesus. Miami, what the hell? Same color, I guess. Miami has shown.
Blue.
Yeah, blue, light bluish. Miami has shown that they don't care about having multiple weapons. They've got Tyreek Hill. They've got Jalen Waddle. They've got their running backs. Tight ends be damned. Wide receiver threes be damned.
Yeah.
And even with an injury to one of those two guys, knock on wood, please don't get injured. They've even also shown that when Waddle was out, they just chucked the ball to Tyreek Hill only.
Yeah. Like River Craycraft is going to do stuff. I mean, like, it's just
Braxton Berrios, like that.
Yeah, generic white guy number 7 and 8. Yeah. Like, It's fine. It's, yeah, Chase Claypool is just a non-fact. I think one of those guys is injured. It might be Craig Kraft. But regardless, Claypool, dust, ignore. This next question here, what do I do with Derrick Henry? Question from Verdingo. We kind of touched on this before.
We talked at length about this.
We already talked about it. No, it's fine. We already talked about it. If you have him, you keep him. If you don't, don't go get him, in my opinion. Make sure you have Tyjae Spears in case anything happens to him. That kind of goes for any star running back if you're taking only one or two leagues seriously. Yeah, there's just not much else to say about Derrick Henry. And the final question is a trade-specific question. Traded Jacobs, Brian Robinson, and Evan Engram for Justin Jefferson, half PPR. Was it worth it? So I didn't get any more context on how this guy's team was built, or more importantly, what his record was. This question from Juan Buitrago 21. But looking at it on the surface, I think that's about what Justin Jefferson is going to fetch right now. Is, you know, you got a couple of pretty good running backs and then a tight end that's like startable and is still going to give you duds, but that's because that's what tight ends do. The concerning part is that, again, if Justin Jefferson just doesn't play all year, then you're fucked. But you didn't give up any insane talent. Jacobs is obviously an RB1, and he's going to be a lineup lock if you own him. Brian Robinson, for most people, is probably a lineup lock, at least as a flex. But I think if you got Jefferson and you have a good record and you're confident he comes back, that's a good deal. I don't mind it.
I'm fine with it as well, just because while Jacobs is, you know, non-PPR RB1 last year, Brian Robinson has looked great at times this year. We've seen it where both of those guys are just non-factors. There are games where those two will be non-factors. They are not like set it and forget it. You're going to set it, but you may regret. They may be set it and regret it, guys. More so.
Patented.
I'm sure
patent that shit.
Someone said that before, but if not, we'll do the snaps there. But you may regret that at a later time. And then Evan Engram, very, you know, solid. What he was being drafted as, like the tight end seven. That sounds about right. Like I've got
that's basically where he is.
I've got Evan Engram in a league, and I'm not looking for upgrade at tight end. I'm just kind of rolling with him. So obviously, again, we don't know the context, but I don't think that you necessarily, you know, broke the bank for a guy. Like, there may be some weeks where you're going to regret that when Jacobs has a huge game or Brian Robinson has a huge game. But then there's going to be those other games where they've been gone. And if you've got a, you must have had a good enough record to do a kind of trade like this, so you must have depth. And again, if Jefferson does come back in 4 weeks and is Justin Jefferson, that's humongous. So, yeah, definitely a fair trade on the value there.
Yeah, definitely reasonable. Whether you're targeting Jefferson or not in a trade is just a matter of how risk averse you are or how much you want to just absolutely swing for the fences. And this man swung for the fences. I don't hate it. That'll do it for this episode of Off the Bench. I think minor, no technical difficulties for the first time in a couple weeks, which is great. It's a great sign.
Yeah. I'm sure. What can we fuck up next week? I'll
just throw my laptop out the fucking window.
Oh my
god,
I was wearing pants the whole time. God damn.
We have to re-record the whole fuck pack. God damn. No. Okay.
Fuck.
Guys.
Lost episode number two here. The Redux. I'm ashamed. And we were on here like I had 20 minutes before we got started to
just rip those suckers off.
I'm very sorry, everybody. I've let you down yet again. Mom, Dad, I've done it again. I'm sorry here, but yeah, but you know, oh well. But you know, guys, I usually plug this and I forgot. This happened about 2 or 3 weeks ago, but we passed 3,000 YouTube subs. Thank you, guys.
We sure did.
Thank you, guys. You know, we've been getting a good 30-ish people watching these streams. You know, it may not be a lot, but it's great for us. We love that you guys want to come here and spend 90 minutes of your Tuesday nights with us. We love you guys. We appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Yes, spread the word. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your grandma. We will help Nana with her fantasy football team while she's whipping up some nice mac and cheese or whatever the fuck Nanas be doing around here. Pat, you stay away from the Nanas. I know how you operate. Don't you give me those eyes.
Invisible glass.
Don't you give me those, you Zach Wilson times two motherfucker. All right, folks. Thank you for listening once again. For Pat Gustafson, I'm Brandon Carney, and we will see you guys next week.
Bye-bye.